Hello, I'm Gui.
I'm Afif.
And I'm Long.
And you're listening to Copy Overflow, a monthly podcast about software development.
But we're not talking exactly about software development today, right? I mean, related?
It is part of it.
So we're just teasing now? We're just going to talk about a thing without actually talking about what we're going to talk about?
Yes. Make them guess.
It's like you'll wait till the end of the episode, then we'll tell you what exactly we'll be talking about. But in all seriousness, Long, what are we going to talk about this episode?
We're talking about form design this episode, but before we even talk about form design, maybe we could talk about like why form design matter at all. Does form design matter to developer?
Maybe you want to clarify a bit what's a form? I'm not sure if we actually do need to clarify what's a form.
I don't think so lah. Forms is a form lah. It's web forms, like forms you see on websites.
Because it's like, we're developers, why do we need to care about what's on a paper form?
Maybe that's a good point to start, right? The whole idea of web form start from the paper form. If you don't have a web form, web page will be static. You just need to submit something, you're going to print out a web page and then fax it.
Just like banks nowadays. I think part of the transition to Web 2.0, sort of. I think that's kind of vague as well, like Web 2.0. It's sort of all these like dynamic websites that can respond to your inputs. And we use forms to do that. Forms are a part of how web change forms. That's your pun. You were asking for it.
For example, business applications, business software, they do mimic a lot of quote-unquote traditional, well, so traditional, but we still have a few tons of paper forms nowadays. Like business applications do mimic filling up paper forms. I guess that's why we call them forms in web as well, because it's a series of fields and values. Does that kind of make the definition of forms, I guess, Long?
I don't know. Do we need a strict definition for this?
We're not the authority on this. There is definitely some working group out there that has a very definitive definition of what is a form.
But can you imagine the web without forms? Like, you want to update Facebook status, you have to edit your own HTML file and upload it. It's like everyone can see. And then somebody wants to comment something, they have to get our HTML file and update it and post it.
Now that you bring it up, isn't that how like MySpace and all used to do it? They have like editors where you can edit the HTML and all.
That's just the appearance though, I think.
The editor itself is a form.
Ah, okay. Fair point. Fair point.
So why form design matters? Wouldn't we just put a bunch of input and then ask people to key in and then get done with it? Maybe we can start with frustration with bad form designs that we have.
Yay, complaint sessions. Yay.
I'm not sure how interesting this is going to be. Either they will like, the listeners will agree. Yeah. Or it's like, well, why is this three people complaining about? Stop bitching.
There are ways to make your form a bit friendlier. So I've heard stuff like, don't make your forms too long. Maybe split it inside a kind of like a wizard with multiple steps. I guess that would probably simulate a real life multiple pages kind of forms. You only have an A4 form. People won't actually stick multiple A4 forms together at the bottom and make it a very long page. So that doesn't make sense. So you would flip to the next page rather than, yeah. In the web, because we don't have that kind of concept, it's very easy to make a very long form, but you won't actually do it in real life anyway with paper forms. It doesn't make sense. So I don't think it should make sense in the web. I have done that, like a very long form.
Yeah, I think that's also one of the good design practices that we should have. Only ask for things that's truly necessary. Recently, I've been trying to renew my family car. This car is really old, more than 20 years old. I know that a lot of websites doesn't do car insurance renewal for old cars. And I tried different websites. Some of the websites are very straightforward. At first, they ask you about the plate number of the car. So you just key in the plate number and then they'll just check if it's more than 20 years old. Okay, you cannot proceed. Just right there, they'll tell you, okay. Done, can't do anything. But a lot of websites, they just like plate numbers, ID numbers, driver license or whatever, blah blah blah, a lot of informations. And then the next step, they tell you, oh, we couldn't renew. After I fill in all those other stuff, you could have tell me by my car plate number. You should just ask me that one first, right? Maybe we can put that into consideration when you design a form. Don't ask for things that's not necessary. I think that's one of the good practice we should have.
Or at least have early checks, right? For example, like in your scenario, you much rather have something told you as well, right? Well, even like creating new accounts, always faced with the problem of when you type in a password or you create a new password, they never specify the requirements. And then when you try to create the account, save the form, then it's like, hey, your password needs to be this. Like, what can you tell me when I was keying in the password field?
and making sure all the required fields are clear. And I guess that happens in real life as well. Like, I remember I went to the bank to open an account, and what's it called? The officer, was it? The teller? The teller gave me like a form that's this thick, 20 pages, I think. But she didn't ask me to fill in everything. She just marked whatever's required on for me, and then it was just like fill in those things. It's probably just 5 pages out of that 20 pages. So yeah, it happens in real life as well. Like, you are only asking for the required stuff first. Yeah, somehow we don't translate that when we're working on web forms.
But that's the thing, right? Imagine if you digitize that 20-page form, but you don't tell them you actually need to fill only 5 pages worth. Then, like, long experience, you have to fill in 20 pages, submit, it's like something's wrong or we don't need that fill or whatever. It's like, especially if the form doesn't save the state.
The progress, yeah.
Yeah, if you refresh and everything's gone, it's like, I'm going to flip table.
Yeah, I'm just going to choose your competitor.
Just for that form.
That's a very good reason for companies or softwares just to have a very streamlined form. I guess this ties into, I'm going to bring something a bit off, but this ties into like page loading performance as well, right? If your page loads quickly, then your users would be much happier. So I think that applies to forms as well. If there are less things to fill in, they can get into whatever they want to do quicker. That drives your business, helps everybody.
If it's easier to sign up for your site, people will sign up for your site, right? If it's easier to make purchase on your site, yeah, people will make purchase on your site. You reduce the frictions. I'm going to come back a bit to what Afif brought up just now, like marking all the required field as clearly. I think there's also some other opinions on this, like this article that I shared with you guys earlier. I think Gui would include it in the podcast later. One of the things that article brought up is, unless labeled otherwise, all those fields that in a form should be required by default, and optional should be marked as optional, versus like everything is optional by default, only those required are marked. I'm not sure if this is a cultural thing, like in Malaysia, I run into that situation a lot. But what Afif described, a lot of this form, someone that hand you the form will just tell you, okay, only these are required. I marked the star there, you just fill in those. So I'm more used to that flow, right? I assume all forms are optionals by default, and only those marked with required are required. But I guess there's advices there, like everything should be required by default, and only some are optionals. What do you guys think? Which way is better?
Paper forms and web forms are a bit different, so that's probably why. With paper forms, they probably want to ask all of the information upfront because they don't want to have many kind of forms. So they don't have like a form when you just registered, and then the form that when you come again. So for example, you went to a bank. Let's say they have like a form only for the required information, and then the next time you come again, they'll give you another form to add extra information or something like that. And that's not really makes sense, because you have to walk into the bank first to be asked those extra information. But then in the web, you're always constantly revisiting that service. If you build a SaaS service, for example, it doesn't make sense to ask upfront, because they are going to come back, and it's easier for them to come back rather than banks or like any brick and mortar places. There are things that you can translate into the web, but there are also things that make the webs itself unique. Have to think new paradigms and or new ways.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Like, for example, when you sign up for a Twitter account, you don't have to key in the Twitter bio description first, right? You could always come back later and update later. When you sign up, you don't have to fill it out. But in the bricks and mortar, you probably want to ask people to sign up whatever optional fields first, because you don't want to ask people to sign up more forms every time they come into your shops or whatever.
For me, I tend to treat forms as required. So, for example, I was applying for something for a bank, and when I went in there, they gave me this thick form as usual. So I flipped through the form, I was like, oh, I have to fill all these things. And then the same process, like the officer, like, okay, you need this thing, this page, flip, this thing, this page. I was like, oh, okay, good to know. But my first impression has always been, I need to fill everything in this form, because that's how I would treat things. But I feel, yes, there's definitely a difference between physical brick and mortar and also web. But you look at just the same providers, like, you apply credit card using a form, physical form, and applying credit card online. The flows are kind of slightly different. They do require like your documents and some similar information, but I feel the web variant of such an application form is actually a lot more streamlined. It could be because of maybe organizational stuff, right? Changing a paper form requires a stamp on how many department heads, but doing a web form is like very straightforward. Maybe the product managers just need to approve it. So maybe this comes into play as well. Of course, we are drawing a very extreme on financial institution here, but maybe there are like other, for example, healthcare, which three of us have no idea about, right? Probably there are like different things happening in that area as well. coming back to the main thing you brought about, long on whether a field is required or optional, it depends ultimately. For example, you know how they break out paper forms in like section A, this is all required, section B, more information, that sort of thing.
I've read this somewhere about you should let computer figure out all these small details for the users. You shouldn't like force user into do this all this thinking for you. Phone numbers. Let's say if you have to fill out phone numbers. Do you require users to put in a certain format with dash, without dash, with country code, without country code? You should let the computer figure that out for you. So just let user key in what they want, just like real life, and then you figure out how to format that phone numbers properly.
Would an example be, for example, if just providing them with one field and if they put special symbols in like a plus or like dash, then would it error out and saying no special symbols? Would it be a good thing for the form to straight away say we expect this format, for example, plus 60, blah, 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 blah? Or would it be good for the form to just key in your full number without any symbols? Or does the form could like split it into two fields, like key in your country code and then your number? There's so many variants to this. I'm trying to draw like which one is related to what you just brought up.
If we really want to let computer do all the thinking, then we should just put in one field and let user key in whatever they want, and then we figure it out.
Do post-processing.
Yeah, do post-processing on the numbers before you store in your database or something.
I was thinking that as well. If they put dash and your database doesn't actually store dashes, you don't have to throw an error message to them saying that, hey, we don't accept dashes, and this is going to make the user frustrated. So you just accept that, remove the dashes yourself, or remove the plus sign or something, and then save that in the database with the format that you actually required. What would be better, and what I've seen on multiple websites, is to just make that phone number field automatically format that for you. I think this happens with our IC. If you see an IC field, you always confuse whether you should put the dashes or not, right? There's this one website, I can't remember which one. As you type, so you type the first 6 words, it automatically appends that dash for me. So the field is kind of like interactive, I guess. So as you put the 6 words, and then it will dash for me, and then it's clear that these are the format. And the same thing goes with phone number as well. The phone number should have like the country flag at the start with like +1, +60, all that. And then it should have all the dashes in between if it should be with dashes or something. Yeah, that's what I think would be best.
And we could use the combination of what way you brought up. You can still hint the user what the format is, and you can still help them to correct that, like what Afi brought up. We don't have to do only one of those. But I think one of those things that we should try to not do is doing inline validation, but don't correct it for you, just showing you, no, this is not how you should be. Going back to the ICE example, oh, you didn't key in dash, please key in dash. Don't do that, just put the dash for the users. And on splitting the fields into multiple inputs, I think depends how you do it. It could become annoying or not. It's one of those situations, let's say the IC for 6 numbers, and then the middle 2 numbers you put in a separate input, and then people somehow key in the 6 numbers, and then they want to go back to the previous field, then they have to like hover their mouse and then delete previous one, or if you click back to the previous one, then you force the user to the next input again with your JavaScript magic, and that become very frustrating as well. And if you do validation, please tell user what's wrong. Don't just say, hey, this is wrong format. It's very confusing.
This is wrong. What's wrong? You're wrong, ah!
I think the article also mentioned that the error text should be around the input field. I think a lot of websites have this. Let's say the form has like 6 fields, and then 2 of them has an error. So they display like a very big error message at the top of the form saying that you have errors in these 2 fields, instead of having an error for each of those fields.
Yeah, per field kind of error, right? For example, if you key invalid phone number or invalid identification number, then it should, rather than just accumulating everything on the top or bottom of the page, the field itself, it would kind of highlight to you already, hey, your identification number is wrong, your phone number seems weird, something like that.
I feel called out for this because I'm doing Rails right now, and Rails has this automatic thing that automatically does the wrong way for you. It will always show the error message at the top.
The flash, right? If you use the flash thing, then it will...
Yeah, so if you have a validation error on your form, it will show all of them at the top in like a banner instead of having an individual fields. But that is actually just the default code generator for Rails. And I guess it's not supposed to be treated as the default behavior is just there to help you quickly do things, but it's never meant to be the final behavior. But sometimes we just stick with that.
It's like, it's there, we just abuse this thing.
Yeah, just abuse it. They make this the best use case. We have other features to implement, so...
This is a very good hammer. Let's just use it for everything.
The conclusion we can arrive is like, just because of the frameworks or libraries that you use have this default behavior doesn't mean they are the best practices or recommended. Be more aware to check those, even if it's like a simple, really easy to use form builders that you can do.
Nowadays, you have all this fancy interactive JavaScript framework. You have like, I think, a million of them to choose from that can probably help do all this interactive form. I guess this is a good segue to another complaint that I have about web forms with this fancy frameworks. So these two people are laughing because they know what I'm going to talk about, because I tweet about it all the time.
If you want forms complaints, follow Afif's Twitter.
Yes, we complain about forms together. Make it better, yeah. And nowadays, with all this React and Vue and like all this interactive framework coming up, like, it's easier to do event bindings, right? So by default, before all this SPA single page applications come in, like, you would always have this form tag with like a submit button. So when you click this submit button, it will actually send the thing to the server, and then you will get like a new fresh reloaded page, right? Form tags has this default behavior where you can actually press enter on any of the text field to submit it. But then when we do all this SPA stuff, some people tend to bind the behavior of us submitting to the click event to the input button. And that actually cancels out the default behavior of forms where you can press enter to submit, because now you are specifically saying that the only way this form can be submitted is by clicking that submit button, which was not how the web works before all this SPA stuff comes in. So my advice, and these people have heard enough of it, if you have a bunch of text fields, please wrap them in a form tag, put the handler as a on submit on that form. Yeah, just have input type submit as an alternative to submit your form. Yeah, this is the second time I rant about this in this week.
See, that's how important form design is. People will rant about your form.
There is one area I will kind of want to move towards, because I think this is the thing, right? Okay, I'm going to break this down into two sections. One is when people enter like software development or website development and they learn how to do forms and all, it's usually very focused on a technical sort of approach. How do I build forms, get input, that sort of thing. I don't think there's a lot of education around accessibility, as in not for a beginner, right? Beginner usually, like, if you watch like YouTube tutorials, they just teach you, oh, how to use React or how to use Vue.js and then how to set up all this thing, you know, get a form, blah, 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 input data, all that sort of thing. Accessibility seems always like a thing. I'm using accessibility as a very, very huge term, encompassing design as well. But this always seems to be a focus on like later part of engineering growth, for example. When you're moving away from a junior role or moving towards a more senior role, that's where accessibility come into play, because you quote unquote mastered like the technical approach on building forms really, and that's where you want to bring all this in. So I feel education is one thing. And also the responsibility nowadays in some organizations has been moved towards designers now. UX and UI designers are now the one who would kind of structure how a form would look like and build the mocks up and all, or the PM will be very much involved, product manager will be very much involved on how the form is going to look, what information they require before handing it over to the engineering team. What do you two think about it?
As in having the accessibility at the last part of the design process?
Well, not necessarily. Like, for example, if the organization or the company has like a strong design guideline or even a design system, and then engineers just plug and play, just take and plug in components, for example, then you know that accessibility is already considered as part of the design already, right? There are like very, very good design systems out there that, hey, if you need a password field, for example, these are the standards we use for keeping passwords in our organization, just copy and paste this component and you're good to go, and that sort of thing. And then they have like more details on like why they do this in their design system. Some that comes into mind, like, for example, GitHub's design system. Twitter, not really. I think a lot of people are complaining about Twitter's design choices quite recently, especially with the font choices and some of the high contrast state stuff. But yeah, I'm not going to go into that. It depends, right? Because if you are like a smaller organization or UI organization that doesn't strongly focus on design, for example, if you are we just like to jab at financial institution, but if, for example, if you're a bank and you don't really care about design, then of course you're going to have like, you know, meh form. So
if you really want to make this work, the way to fix it must be part of the process. It sounds like very generic things to say, but for example, like what you brought up, have a design system that already have accessibility baked in. We have a component library. You implement your forms using the components library, and they already have all the proper accessibility code in there, right? Alternate tags, ARIA, whatnot. And the other way is like it's closer to what we do at the coding level, engineering level, is you could have some sort of automated check for your PR pull request or whatnot, or in your IDE, like those Sona Linting or something, the plugin name, have some sort of accessibility check as well. Or you could have it in your, let's say you have dedicated QA team and their browser can have all sort of accessibility check browser plugin when they do their manual tests. And I think these are more feasible way to do it, because you can't be going through every developer and tell them, hey, you have to, when you come to this, you have to do this. When you come to this form element, you have to do this. You gotta bake it into your process, else it's really difficult to make it work. Because especially when you come to forms, if the whole form is accessible, it's accessible. If one of the fields is not accessible, then the whole form, it doesn't matter what other fields are not accessible. Like for the whole form, yeah, it's very friendly for keyboard users, and then at the submit button is the one that you miss out on, and you cannot submit the whole form. Like, you know, you cannot press enter to submit, and then like, what? The form is a very holistic thing, right? You can't just make part of it accessible and then the other part is not accessible. That's my thought of it. Not that I'm very good at it, but I think that's the approach that we could take.
I wanted to say it will require the organization to have a mindset change on emphasis on accessibility, because if the organization treats like accessibility as an afterthought, they are going to suffer, but probably in ways that they won't see it. So like Afif mentioned, right, hey, your form is like so terrible, I'm just going to move to your competitor. Like, it's so easy nowadays, just unless really it's a monopoly, but it's so easy because there are competitors out there who's probably looking at these things and like, yeah, how can we streamline our form? How can we make our form more friendly? And this will help a lot for example, blind people, right, who rely on screen readers, and having the proper labels and things everywhere would help them a lot. That's a huge segment of customer base right there. Or even if your form is for internal users only, it's going to help out.
That's also one point to worth pointing out. Accessibility doesn't always just help with people with different abilities, right? Things that help the visually impaired group can also help your average user as well. Better contrast, easier to read on your normal screen. People feel happier. Like, great what you brought up, like, if the company doesn't have the cultures, I think if you really care, right, you could be the one that champion for it, push for certain accessibilities. If you couldn't convince the business value, I guess you can always bring up some of those. Especially, I think, coming from some governments in Europe where we started to have all this compliance needed for accessibilities. That could bring us some business value, right, or form design or whatnot. Companies could need that compliance to purchase your product or use your services. That's business value there as well.
I think in the US, there's this vaccination appointment application or website got sued by visually impaired people or something, because they want to get the vaccine, but they cannot because the vaccine appointment website, correct me if I'm wrong, the vaccine appointment site wasn't able to cater for visually impaired people. So they actually sued the state government or something, I can't remember. In that case, it actually impacts their life and death, accessibility. It's not just about using Facebook or something. It's really important stuff.
Did I read this from a Twitter thread or somewhere? I can't recall. There's a story where visually impaired person have difficulty submit a form to apply for college. That somewhat impact the person's in his ability to complete the whole college course or educations. So you are actually making people thinking twice about their life choices. Well, I don't want to go to the spectrum thinking like, oh, you are evil if you're not thinking about accessibility, but it might have more impact than what I guess what we usually think it is.
Because there's so many different types of user personas as well, right? Like when you imagine a user persona, you probably would imagine it very closely to your or your team's identity and cultural identity as well. So that's where this is going dead off tangent already. I'm gonna say this is where diverse teams help a lot, right? If you have, for example, someone who is visually impaired or hard of hearing in your team, and they know how it is like to live it, they will definitely give their input in the shipping of the product and the forms and all that sort of thing. So yeah.
Are we going tangent? Are we still talking about form design?
I think we're talking about accessibility in general, but it's okay. We can go back to forms, and I have more complaints about people not enabling enter. You know, there's one bank. So when I said, oh, some people don't enable submit by enter, right? There's actually one bank in Malaysia that specifically when you press enter, it will have an error message down there saying, please click submit button.
Afif, it's just easier to code an error message rather than actually allowing you to submit through enter, you know?
I am so frustrated every time I use it. But yeah, I didn't have a choice. It's so much harder to change bank accounts. So I just stick with it and like...
But banks are getting more competitive, especially now. Like a lot of services now they offer are like, going digital already. So I'm surprised to see like, banks that offer corporate accounts that you can apply for it online. Like, wow.
So recently I've been posting on Substack. So whenever you upload an image on Substack, you can key in the alternate text. And the input for alternate text on Substack is just so terrible because it gives you very narrow text input to key in the cover image alternate text, not cover image, any image you upload. And it's like, I don't know, 100 pixel width or something. Only enough for like two words or one word. Is that what you're supposed to do with alternate text? If you key in longer, you basically cannot see what you key in anymore. Versus something like on Twitter, you can just have a whole vertex area to key in your alternate text. And I think that's one example of bad form design because good text input should allow user to see what they key in so that people can actually know if they key in something correctly or wrong or miss out something versus very narrow fields. Can you imagine like, that happens in real life? I don't know. I guess it's a very digital thing.
Yeah, it's like key in your address, but the field is only 2 centimeters long. Like, what do you want me to do with this? But at least in the form, you can write to the side.
Yeah, I know, right? On digital, you cannot. You just like keep typing and then keep seeing that one small part of your text. Yeah, that's very frustrating.
Maybe we should start a collection of this. Badformdesign.com and then just list all of them. And make the world better place. Maybe like this big company see their name on the entry and then it's like, oh, okay, somebody is complaining. I'm in the hall of shame. Maybe we will make the world better. Make better forms.
It's just like a calling out session now. This company, bad design.
I didn't name the company. Long name the company. So.
Oh no. Please don't ban me.
Okay, I guess we can sort of end. We did go on tangents or a bit around the place, but that's the thing, right? Form design is a very huge aspect of how people use the web, right? Everything you input is a form on the web. We talked about accessibility. These are very concrete examples that can be carried over in form design as well. And yes, we'll definitely be sharing the site that we're talking about, which is Form Design Best Practice Research Insights and Examples from I can't pronounce it. I'm sorry if I butcher your name. Jerry Reed. She does provide a lot of thoughts on guidelines and also she definitely linked several WCAG, Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, WCAG. So she links WCAG references as well on like, hey, this thing ought to be this according to WCAG risk section. So definitely good read. I'll post this up in the show notes as well.
It's so ironic. We've been complaining about banks the whole episode and this article is actually from someone who is working in a bank, but not Malaysian Bank, Bank of America, Bank of Scotland.
It's good. At least, I mean, they are taking notice of it.
I hope Malaysian banks will catch up soon.
I mean, something long brought up as well, right? I definitely remember this because we were talking about accessibility being a law in the EU in the coming years, right? EU will start enforcing accessibility in forms and sites and that sort of thing as part of law. So that's probably a reason why the banks are looking into it. All right, so I guess we can wrap up this episode then. I don't know, Long, do you have any last concluding remarks you want to give before we wrap up?
If we want to sum up this whole thing, we talk about like accessibility and form. I guess I could steal this thing. I think I say this a lot, like things I read somewhere, but I don't know where, about these three principles. For good form design, check for these three things. If you cannot check all these small details. On visuals, make it easy to see. On motor, make it easy to interact. On cognitive, make it easy to understand. That's sort of good guideline. It's from some accessibility books that I read somewhere. I couldn't recall. Sorry.
Maybe you can find the title, then if we find it, we'll link it in the show notes as well. Okay, this has been the episode. So follow us on Twitter, Copy Overflow. We are available on Spotify and all other major podcast platforms as well, including Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. And check out our YouTube channel as well.
Don't let your copy overflow and don't build forms that you cannot enter to submit, okay?
All right, thank you.
Bye.